Awesome. Thank you, Chuck. Man, it is a pleasure to be here. Now, my wife's a native, all right? So don't let the tie fool you. I'm not stuffy, all right? This is just old school. You see the gray hair. But it's a great privilege to be with you. And Chuck's invitation for us to come was just awesome, especially the privilege of being able to talk to people he shepherds and provides watch care for. And I realize what a big deal it is as a pastor myself for a pastor to open his pulpit. So, brother, thank you very much for your heart. And I know he just got back from Scotland, and he's seen the ministry that I'm going to tell you about firsthand. And he got to talk to some of the people that maybe you'll see in some of these pictures. And that's a first for me. My wife and I travel around and do this for the Ministry of 20 Schemes. This is what we do. And we're currently raising our own support. We were the first missionaries to join 20 Schemes. And they're a year old this month. They launched in the UK last October, and then they launched in December in the States. So we have a stateside operation and a UK operation. And I'll go ahead and tell you that the stateside operation exists for the sole purpose of raising up partnering churches in the United States that will help fund and provide recruits, apprentices, and interns for the ministry that we're doing in Scotland. All right? So Jackson's for Scotland is all about us working with 20 schemes to help get the ministry over there off the ground and solid in a very specific target area for what we're trying to do. And I'm going to coordinate with the folks in the sound booth about moving through these slides. So if we could, the next 8 or 10 or so, if we could just do 3 or 4 seconds per and just run through them, because what we're going to do is, when you think of Scotland, you probably get a picture in your mind, don't you? You've probably seen, how many of you have seen Braveheart? Yeah, okay. The kilt thing with the ticking and all that, yeah. But you got other images in your mind as well. So let's look at this. Scotland is beautiful. All right, go ahead, next slide. It's just off the chart. These are all pictures taken by my daughter, Anna Catherine, when we were over there about 2 months ago. We went to all these places and saw all these people, interesting people. Look at the familiar. You see stuff that you recognize over there as well. Guys in skirts, you know, playing bagpipes. What's that? All right, if you'll stop right there. And then Nessie. All right, the second day we were in Scotland, we went up to Loch Ness and spent an entire day all around Loch Ness. It's like a 26-mile-long lake that's so deep in places they don't even know, I guess. That's what they told us anyway. So you look at this and you think, yeah, Scotland is off the chart beautiful. It's a romantic place. It's an ancient place. It's the kind of place that you want to go. How many of you play golf and would own up to it? Anybody? All right, it's like golf paradise, man. It is golf. We met all kinds of people at the airport, guys, packs of guys who were over there for no other reason than to play golf. I don't get golf. I lose my Christianity when I play golf, so I don't do it. I do other things where I can maintain control. But with all of the beauty, with all of the surface off the chart, just draw, because it mesmerizes you. Next slide. Scotland is a dark place. Very, very dark. It's the darkest spiritual place I've ever personally been to. I'm not a world traveler, but I've been to some places. And I've never seen anything like what we saw in Scotland. 5.5 million people. And most of those people, if you can believe it, this is not an exaggeration, they don't have any idea who Jesus Christ is. Jesus is a swear word at best. Give you an example. There was a pastor who was speaking in one of the high schools in Scotland. When he finished his talk, a 15-year-old girl came up to him and said, "Isn't Jesus like a king or something of a country somewhere or something?" She had no idea where to put Jesus in history. None. And you'll find that all over Scotland. All over. And I'll continue in the presentation to kind of flesh that out for you as we go. And at the end, I hope to have a little bit of time for you to ask some questions. So feel free to do that as well. All right, next slide. We understand that the answer for the darkness is for the Lord Jesus Christ to open the Scots' eyes so that they can turn from darkness to light, from the dominion of Satan to God, in order that they may receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who've been sanctified by faith in Christ. We believe that. And we believe that that is the only answer for the darkness that these people are in. Next slide. I am not ashamed of the gospel. The gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ is the power of God unto salvation. Do they need to be fed if they're hungry? Yes. Do they need to be clothed if they're naked? Yes. And we want to do all of those things. But at the heart of what we believe about Mercy Ministry is bringing spiritual light to dark, dark places. We are not ashamed of the gospel, and we go into these places that are very dark, full on with the gospel. There's no bait and switch. We move in, we camp out among them, and we hammer the gospel of Jesus Christ. And here's the great thing. Scots are like in-your-face people. They love the in-your-face kind of approach. So when we walk up and tell them that they're filthy, rotten, stinking sinners, they're all over that. They're good with that. And then we tell them about Christ. And we really do this. And if you had met Mez, you would see that the guy who helped found the ministry is a very in-your-face guy. All right? Next slide. Now, let me ask you this. Before you read this with me, think in your mind. Get a picture in your mind. When you think of a mission frontier, when you think of a place in mission work where you're going to go out and reach the unreached, what kind of place or picture comes into your mind? Go ahead, anybody. Africa, like the deep recesses of the Congo. Yeah, a place where you got to hack an airstrip out of the jungle and bring a float plane in on a river just to get your groceries. Yes. What else? Anything else? What do you think of?
India.
Yes. Lots and tons and lots and tons of people and all kinds of stuff going on. But you think of Haiti? Do you think of kids with big bloated bellies because they don't have enough food, or Ethiopia? You think of places like that, don't you? Scotland isn't the first place that comes to your mind when you think about an unreached people group, right? It's not intuitive. This book came out by John Piper and David Mathis. I'll assume you guys know a little bit about who those guys are from Desiring God Ministries. Missions is a summons to the frontier, yes, but what is the frontier? How you define frontier matters. More and more, those frontiers aren't savages living in the woods or the jungles that make for the mission stories of the previous generations. Today's frontiers are home to those hostile to the gospel. Think flat, hot, crowded in the world's urban megacenter. So it seems that God is bringing the unreached people out of the woods and into the cities for the finishing of the mission. Well, don't think flat, hot, and crowded. Think rolling, freezing cold and crowded if you're going to think about Scotland. Because, baby, it's cold in Scotland. Really cold. I visited there for the first time in February, and I had all kinds of layers because they say, do layers, dude. I did layers. And I wore those layers when I went to bed. I wore them when I was in the house. I never took them off. I've never had cold in my bones like that before. And it ain't just because I'm old. It's just cold. All right, next slide. There's one spiritual reality that we're dealing with, and that spiritual reality is there are millions of people in Scotland who have never heard the gospel. Never. They have no idea about sin and forgiveness for sins. All right, next slide. And one spiritual remedy. At the core of everything that we're seeing in the way of the deprivation in Scotland is a spiritual depravity, a spiritual deprivation that only the gospel can touch. Only the gospel can remedy. And I'm a gospel preacher, and I'm going to hammer the gospel and hammer the gospel. These people need Christ more than they need soup, more than they need clothing. And more than they need all the government handouts that they're used to. Because it's a socialized country. And there's the target. There's the target. That's what we're aiming at. What you see in that picture. Those are schemes. Next slide. What are schemes? Schemes are socialized or government housing communities. There are hundreds of them all over the UK, all over Scotland. So that there are millions of economically, socially, and spiritually deprived people living in these housing communities, most of them constructed by the government. You and I in the States would call these communities the projects. Now, how many of us flock to the projects to do anything? It's the same thing in Scotland. People drive around the projects. They don't go through them. People avoid the schemes from the middle class. They typically don't go into them. It's the kind of places that you tell your children, don't go there in the day, much less don't go in the night. Stay away. That's what we're talking about. These are scheme communities, government housing communities, and thousands and thousands and thousands of people live in these communities all over Scotland, and they're basically unreached. The nation as a whole is unreached. Okay, next slide. So the schemes present a unique challenge for ministry, and here are some of the reasons why. There's a very high level of deprivation and dysfunction. Now listen, folks, I'm not kidding you when I tell you, if you think of the worst, that's what we're talking about. This is top of the chart, top of the rung deprivation. It's the same kind of thing that you'd see in the projects here in America. When you walk in and you see them in tennis shoes that cost hundreds of dollars, jackets that cost hundreds of dollars or whatever, and they don't even know where their next meal's coming from. It's that kind of stuff. Priorities are totally out of whack. It's an entitlement mentality for many people. They live off the government. They saw their dad and their granddad live off the government. And the government just feeds and feeds and feeds them all kinds of handouts, all kinds of entitlements for them to do whatever. It would blow your mind to hear stories about how these people are used to just getting and doing nothing for it. Nothing. It's amazing. And they look at you like, are you nuts? If you try to talk to them about the idea of being a steward of what they have or earning what they have, most of the scheme communities that I'm talking about, these projects, there's higher than 60% unemployment in most of them. So more than half the people in any given scheme community are unemployed and living off the government. How do they pay for all of that? Well, just think of it this way. One way, gas over there is $10 a gallon. I don't know what you guys paid. It's about that. And on and on and on and on it goes. You should see all of the ways that they get into your pocketbook to get your money to give it to somebody else. There's a really, really serious drug culture, both legal and illegal. Believe it or not, they'll tell you, in most of the scheme communities, legalized drugs are more of a problem than illegal drugs. You can line up at what I call the candy stores, the government candy stores. We would drive around and see all these lines, especially in the evening, in these different villages and areas. And I said, what are all these people lining up for? Oh, that's the candy shop, Jeff. That's where they get their drugs from the government. They have doctors write them a prescription. They go in, they get things like methadone. And methadone becomes the new standard in trade. It's what they use to get what they want. So they trade heroin and crack cocaine and whatever else for methadone. Also, as you can imagine, there's a huge criminal underbelly in most of this and terrible gang violence. And when you think gang violence, here's what you need to think of. You need to think of preteen and young teenage boys packing up like wolves and preying on people and fighting each other. Now, it's really, really hard to get guns in Scotland, but you don't have any problem getting knives and swords. And so these gangs will get into the back lots of these places and go at each other like medieval times with swords and knives and kill each other. Tell you one story that was told to me by somebody who had come out of Scheme Life while I was there. He had spent some time in prison. They were in a gang fight. They were using swords. There were girls that were joining in the fight from the schemes. It's like the schemes, they'll steal from each other within the scheme, and they'll fight each other within the scheme, but let people from other schemes come in, and all of a sudden they're best friends, and now they're fighting the enemy from without. It's that kind of thing. You can talk about anybody you want to, but don't talk about my family. It's that. So they're in a fight. He's telling me this story. This guy had just about killed this one man, and the man's on the ground, and his sister jumped on the back of this other guy in the fight and was scratching him. It was just a wild melee. Well, this guy stumbled up and kind of, messed up, and he grabbed the sword off the ground and stuck it in the guy, and it went clean through him into his sister and killed his sister. He went to prison. I met that guy. That's the kind of stuff that's going on in these people's lives. It's serious. It's hardcore ministry. Deep-seated distrust. These people don't trust anybody, but they have good reason for that. It's a survival mentality. And then a very unique cultural context. You know, schemes up in the highlands are going to be a little bit different from scheme communities down in the population belt. If you look at Scotland, you think Edinburgh is the capital, Dundee, Glasgow, all kinds of places in between. That swath across the middle of the country is where most of the people live. And as you go up higher and higher, further north, more and more sparse, but still scheme communities. And they're a little different. They're all wired. So there's a cultural context that we have to deal with that's very, very real. It's just like here. Do you run into different kinds of people the further one direction or another you go in here? Well, yeah. That's normal, right? Okay. But with the unique challenges, there are unique opportunities. And that's how we look at it. And here's one of the greatest pluses for what we're doing in our ministry in Scotland. It's English speaking. I love that. 52 years old, I don't have to learn French. I have enough trouble with Greek. It's a first world country. Modern roads, modern places, modern conveniences. You're not in the jungle. You don't have to have a float plane to get to the people that we want to reach. I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying that's not our reality. And I'm kind of relieved about that. And then it's an urban environment, which means the people are accessible. You just drive in and there they are. So what are the pluses? Listen, if we were to partner with you guys, if the Lord was to work something like this out through your leadership, and this was to happen, one example would be if you guys got a phone call, hey, we need some help in this particular scheme, or we've got this church getting off the ground over here. Would you guys be willing to send a small mission team over to help us get a day camp off the ground? We're going to do a week-long youth day camp. Would you guys come over and help us get that thing off the ground and get it going? You guys could come over and get off the plane and immediately start communicating with everybody. You could speak the language. You could go out in the community and you wouldn't have to have an interpreter. All kinds of possibilities begin to open up. They speak a form of English in Scotland. You're good as long as they know you're an American and they're talking to you. You're good because they slow down and they schemes are another story. You go on the scheme and you get ghetto scheme. You get ghetto Scott. I can't even do ghetto Scott. You might have to have an interpreter there, but everywhere else you're good, all right? Why the schemes of Scotland? Well, it's what Jesus said in Matthew 9 when he called Matthew, and they had a big party at Matthew's house, remember? And Matthew was all thrilled that this young rabbi would call him into ministry with him, and he invited all of his crony friends. Now, Matthew was hated. The Jews hated Matthew because they saw him as a traitor. He had a tax franchise taxing his own people, and he was the collector. Everybody else hated him because he's a scuzzbag, and they don't like him. So his only friends were other scuzzbags. That's it. So he invited all those people to the party, and there's Jesus in the middle of them. Well, the Pharisees saw this from a distance. They didn't want to have anything to do with this unclean place. Why is he sitting down with these sinners and tax collectors, the worst of the worst? Why is your master doing that? Doesn't he realize he's defiling himself by associating with these riffraffs? There's Jesus right in the middle of it. And so Jesus knew what was going on, and this was his response. You know what? We're going to the people who are sick. Those are the people who need the physician. That's what we're doing in the schemes, you guys. We're deliberately and intentionally moving ourselves right into the middle of where the sick people are and doing spiritual battle on their behalf. That's what we're doing. And we're not doing it because we're brave. We're cowards, believe me. We're not doing this because we're nice people. I can't even tell you that we're doing it because we care. We do. We're doing it because we're called by the Lord Jesus Christ to do that. To go to where the sick people are and reach out to them and bring them the gospel and give them hope. How do they know? How do they know? Okay? There's one of your co-founders. That's Mr. Thug Mez McConnell. Pastor Mez is a schemer. Pastor Mez grew up in the schemes. Pastor Mez was saved because people came into the schemes and gave him the gospel. Pastor Mez went to prison for stabbing a guy, almost killing him. Pastor Mez got out of prison and got saved, and God called him into ministry. And now Pastor Mez is pastoring for the last 7 years in the worst scheme community in the capital of Edinburgh, Nidri Community Church. Next slide. There it is. On the top, you see the building. In the bottom, you see the people inside. That's it. There it is. Nothing fancy. You could drive right by that, sitting in the middle of the scheme in Nidri, and you never even know it was a church. It just looks like a building. You see that big old door on the front? Did you go in the church? See that big old door? When I walked in and saw that big door, I was like, oh, man, what's all the, you know? Yeesh. You walk around and you figure out why. So quick story about Mez. Mez used to work and cut his eye teeth spiritually in the ghettos of Sao Paulo, Brazil, working among the street children. He did that for 5 years. Rough stuff. So they wanted to interview Mez about coming and doing a rechurch plant, building this new building and getting this church off the ground because it had died. And there was a sister church that wanted to work in that area. So they heard about Mez and interviewed him. Long story short, Mez told me this story. He said, we're sitting in the car in the back seat, my wife and I, Miriam, and we're driving up and we're driving through this scheme. And he said, to us, it looked like posh, nice, compared to where we've been. And he looked over at his wife and he said, I don't think this is going to work for us. Now remember, this is a ghetto guy. Grew up in it, right? This is what he's known. They get out of the car and he's thinking, this is not going to work. This is too nice. He walks up to that door. At that moment, a brick came flying by his head and hit the glass next to the door and busted the glass out. He looked over at his wife and said, things are looking up. Things are looking up. And it was a bunch of 12-year-olds hollering and cussing and screaming across the street. A little gang of them. All right, next slide. This is your other co-founder. This is Matthew Spandler Davison. This is the guy that recruited us for 20 schemes. Matthew pastors a church in the United States. Born and raised just south of Aberdeen, Scotland. Got involved with Nine Marks Ministries and Mark Dever. Matthew pastors a church in Bardstown, Kentucky, just south of Louisville. About 45 minutes south of Louisville. Next slide. Matthew and Mez are friends. They hooked up and they formed 20 schemes because they have a heart to go into these ghetto communities, if you will. I'm using that term lightly, okay? That's just something to help you communicate with me about what this thing is. They formed 20 schemes to go in and reach these people for Jesus Christ. Now, you look at that character on the right with the attitude and the beanie and the hoodie. That's him. That's Mez. He talks their language. He understands them fully. They don't come in and manipulate Mez. He'll tell them in a heartbeat, shut up. I know where you're coming from, man. You ain't getting no money from me. But I'll tell you what I will give you. I'll tell you what you really need. He does that. And I'm telling you, it resonates. 7 years. Mez's church is the model in Scotland of what we want to do. That's what we want to replicate or duplicate in the schemes around the country, okay? This is the mission of 20 schemes, to build healthy, gospel-centered churches for Scotland's poorest communities through church planning and revitalization. And what we want to do ultimately is raise up indigenous leadership. We want Scots pastoring and leading Scottish churches. That's what we want. But that's going to take time. It's going to take time for us to raise these guys up in the Lord and disciple them and bring them to the point where they can then provide watch care for these different kinds of congregations. But schemers know scheme ministry best. That's what we're hoping to do, okay? How are we going to accomplish the mission of church planting and church revitalization in these schemes? Well, we want to identify 20 priority schemes or church revitalization projects. We've done that, okay? We're there. We've got more opportunity right now than we have people or funds to do it. We have a number of different scheme communities where they already have church buildings that are either abandoned or only have a few people left, and they're begging us to send them a pastoral team to come and revitalize the church, replant it. And we don't have anybody. Bottom line, we're raising them up. In the last couple of 3 months, things are starting to turn around a little bit for us. But remember, we're only a year old this month in Scotland. So what our goal is we want to plant 20 churches in 20 scheme communities in the next 10 years. And the last count I had, we had 7 opportunities today where we're ready to go. We just need all the resources to do it. So it's a good problem to have. It's exciting. Also, we want to recruit 20 church planting teams, couples, a man and a woman who would have a heart to do something like this, eyes wide open. We do 5-day vision trips for churches that partner with us, and we send a team over to look at the ministry and go into the schemes and see exactly what we're trying to do, especially for people who are considering coming on with us. So we need 20 of those church planting teams in place. Also, we need 20 female outreach workers. Ladies, you can ask questions about this of me later if you want to, and I'll give you more detail. This is like the biggest need that we have. Many, many, many of the schemes are populated most by women. Single again women, divorced women, women who've never been married with children. There is a huge need for female outreach workers. So every pastoral team, every church planting team that goes in needs a female outreach worker with them to reach out to these women. Most of these women have no idea how to cook, how to clean, how to do anything. Please don't hear chauvinism in that, guys. This is just bare reality for living life. They don't have any skill like that because they've never been taught. Their mom and dad were probably drug addicts or alcoholics. They probably made their way through life living in the streets, doing it on their own. And now they're pregnant and they have children and they don't have a clue how to raise kids. So what happens when they come to Jesus? They're like little babies, 24/7. It costs us about $10,000 a year for one disciple because we have to take them in. Most of them don't have jobs. They don't even know how to be part of society. They've made their living off the drug culture, off prostitution. A lot of these women, they don't know what it's like to be around a man who cares about them and treats them with respect. They have no idea what that feels like. Because most of the men they know use them and abuse them. So they don't trust them. With good reason. We have to teach them how to relate to us. Well, you know how hard that is? You take a woman who's been through stuff like that and put her in front of a guy, and now this guy's wanting to be tender with her, and she's like, what's your deal, man? What do you want? Right? So we need female outreach workers to help bridge the gap. It's critical, critical need. I'm taking a little bit more time here because I want you to understand the reality of what we're facing. And then we need apprentices and interns. Chuck just told me that there's an intern thing going on. I'll let him tell you more about that. But it's exciting to me. We need apprentices and interns, people that will go over for a month at a time, people that will go over for a summer. We even have a 2-year internship or apprenticeship program that people can get involved in. So we have all different kinds of levels for you to plug in, take a look, or help. College students, single folks, retirees, retired couple who may want to go over and help out. I mean, there's lots of work to be done, lots of different jobs, okay? All right, this is a city, Dundee, of about 150,000 people. This is one example of about 7 or 8 that we currently have. So I just chose this one to let you know, hey, here's something typical that we're facing right now. Dundee, about 150,000 people. Think of Lockheed as like a suburb of Dundee. All right, next slide. Now I want you to see this church. On the right is a street view of the village of Lockheed, right out in front of this church. On the left is a church, and it's been sitting vacant for more than 15 years. That church will seat as many as this building will seat. And it's been vacant for 15 years in Lockheed. Lockheed is a city of 18,000 people. 18,000 people, next slide. Zero gospel witness. 18,000 people in this scheme community, no gospel, no church. It's just sitting there. I toured that building and wept. I went in, it's beautiful. Next one. Not one believer. Why? There's no church. As far as we know, there's not a believer in that scheme. There's no church. There hasn't been a church there in years and years and years. Nothing. They have no idea. We're here. How many churches did you pass to get here this morning? I live in the Bible Belt. I live in Georgia. I don't know how many churches we pass in a 10-mile radius of the church that we go to get to where we worship. They're on every corner. We recently toured a church, went to a church and visited in Scotland for the 2 weeks we were there, way up in the Highlands on the North Sea. It's a village of about 2,000 people. And this little bitty Baptist church has 18 people left in it, and most of them have gray hair. The youngest person is in their late 50s. Over half the church is over 70. And their church is dying, and they know it. And they're looking for a pastor. They've been looking for 2 years. They can't find one in Scotland, in the UK, because they can't find anybody that'll preach only Jesus for forgiveness for sins. They graduated 4 students from the Baptist College in Scotland last year, and none of those guys could you get them to say Jesus is the only way for forgiveness for sins, and the scripture is wholly sufficient. So where do you go to get a pastor? Where do you go to get help? This is the kind of thing. There are hundreds of churches all over Scotland with no pastor, dying out. Hundreds more have already died, and now they're pubs, bars, community centers, theaters. You can drive all over Scotland and see these churches that have shut down, and now they're something else. In the Church of Scotland, which is the national church, since the 1950s, they've been losing 10,000 people a year. You do the math. Or every 10 years. 10,000. Last year alone, it's estimated that the Church of Scotland lost 23,000 people. If you go on the Church of Scotland's website right now, you can go, Church of Scotland, look it up, Google it, and you'll see over 80 properties for sale. 80 church properties for sale in the Church of Scotland alone. The Church of Scotland is the kind of place where you would go, and most of them, the vast majority of them, you're going to get a little homily, a little feel-good message. You're not going to get any gospel. This is all over the country, you guys. It's messed up. But that's what happens when you jettison the Bible and try to get cute. When you stop believing that the gospel and the scriptures are the way for people to come to Christ, you get in trouble. And Scotland's in big trouble. So how can you help? You can partner with 20 schemes. Church partnering, of course, that would involve financial giving. We need money. I can't be apologetic about the fact that it takes money to do ministry. You got to have money here to do ministry. It's just a reality. It's extremely expensive in Scotland. We're being told that for us right now, as we raise our support, we need to raise at least $70,000 U.S. for us to minister in Scotland. We don't get all those government kickbacks. We don't get all that government help. We're not entitled. We're on our own if we go. So if we go over and my wife and family and I go and live in a scheme, because that's how we do it. We send the church planting team right into the scheme and they live there with the people. They have to live right where they live and deal with all the stuff they deal with. Only what we hope is they see that we deal with it differently. We deal with it in the Lord, and they start going, well, that's different. See, all of them have the mentality they won't last a year. And in some cases, they've been right. But when they see them stay and stay and stay, they got to go check it out. And then people going. We need people that would be willing to come over, even if it's for a brief time, a short-term trip. You can learn more about that at our table right outside the door here after the service. Okay? So Jackson's for Scotland. That's what we hope to be a part of. This is more now a little bit about how we're involved with the ministry. Next slide. Our role is to build a U.S. base to resource the gospel work in Scotland. That's what the Jacksons do. When we came on 6 months ago or so as the first missionaries with these guys, we were missionaries in residence. What that means is they wanted me, when I asked them, I went over and saw everything. I said, I'm full in. What do I do? Where do you want me? I've been pastoring for a lot of years, so I know ministry, and I know what it means to be involved in a church. I've done church planting. How can you use me? They said, Jeff, we want you to stay in the States. I went, what? I've been praying for 15 years about going international among unreached people. Now you want me to stay here with all these hard heads? Yes. I said, what do you want me to do? We want you to go around the United States and we want you to put 20 schemes on the U.S. map of evangelicalism. I said, well, that's not a big job at all. Okay, how do I do that? Oh, and by the way, we can't pay you. So we're raising our own support, not a problem. Never done that before. That's what we're doing. We're raising our support right now so that we can stay here and continue to do what I'm doing with you. I have another church in Scottsdale in a couple of Sundays that I'll be at, a friend of Chuck's, that graciously is going to allow me to come and do this presentation and preach for him as well. And all we're doing is just letting people know, hey, if you guys are interested in international ministry among an unreached people, English speaking, talk to us. Talk to us. That's what I do. This is what I do. This is what my family's doing. People ask us, so when are you going to Scotland? Well, we thought we were going in Easter to a church up in the Highlands, and that fell through. But that's okay. So we just keep doing what we're doing and wait for the next opportunity. Not everybody can get married. We dated for a little while, and it didn't work out. But I know God's got something somewhere. Hey, we may end up pastoring here in Tempe, Chandler, whatever. But I guarantee you, if I do that, that church is going to know before I come that we're over there. Y'all need to gather it up because we're going to reach people, right? I think that's what you have sitting here on the front row is a heart like that. Okay? How are we going to do what we're doing as the Jacksons? By developing partnerships with churches and individuals here and recruiting church planters and women's ministry workers and interns to go there. This is kind of weird. 20 schemes realized that if they wanted us to be able to continue to do this with them for the next 18 months while we raise our support, we had to have support. I got to have a way to make a living. So they gave us permission to come in and do this presentation and also make appeals for raising our own support. So you're looking at a guy who's trying to figure out, how do I raise money for 20 schemes and how do I raise money for me? That's what I'm doing. And it's just weird, but that's the reality. I don't know of anybody that's writing that book, so we're kind of writing it as we go. That's all right. The Lord knows. All right, next one. How can you help? You can partner with us. All 20 schemes missionaries, including us, are self-funded, so your partnership makes our work possible, and it matters. It matters a lot. And the next one, here's how we understand partnership. It's a stewardship, and it's a stewardship not just of money. It's a stewardship of ministry. We can't go if we don't raise it because they can't pay us. The churches over there that I would go and pastor, most of them are dead or dying. They can't afford a salary. This little church up in the north of the Highlands of 18 people, we were raising our support. I was going to have to pay my own salary to go pastor the church. That's just the reality. And there are hundreds of churches like that all over Scotland. We see it as a stewardship of ministry, about people who've been providentially directed to us and desire to give of the resources that they have to see what the Lord can do through our ministry. All right? But we also understand that it goes beyond just money. It's prayer. It's encouragement. And it's potential for you to be involved in short-term work. You know, this is a very raw, gritty, hard, long-term work. Now, I got off the airplane in Scotland in February, and it was freezing cold, I told you. I remember after I'd been there a few days, we went to one of the toughest schemes that 20 Schemes is involved with. And a long story short, it was sleeting, right? And the sleet was blowing sideways, parallel to the ground. I'm telling you, it was howling. I'm in the back seat of the car. I'm freezing to death. I've been in the car for an hour, and I don't want to get out. I'm in there like a pretzel, right? And I'm looking out the window, looking. We drive up into this gray, dank, ugly scheme. It just feels oppressive. And we got the sideways sleet going on, and kids are getting off the buses, and they're hitting each other and laughing and hollering, and I'm looking at these kids out there and that, and I'm thinking, no wonder the British Army wanted Scots in kilts on the front line. These are some hardy people. You have to be that to live here and survive. Listen, we're driving through Dundee and it's snowing, like I'm telling you, that same day, earlier that day in Dundee, and there are women out there pushing strollers in it. They don't let it get to them. They just live their lives. So where am I going with all this? So I'm looking at all this. I get out of the car. They make me get out of the car because I got to go in and see the ministry and the scheme where this guy's got this little apartment and he's got his little family and the heat's broken. So we all go in there and we're standing around and the heat's broken, right? I'm real happy to be there. And then they ask me to pray. Doesn't that always happen like that? And then I felt it. I thought, this guy has been here 9 months. Him and his family living in this little bitty thing, trying to get a coffee shop off the ground so that they can get the word out that they're here and they're serious. They've broken all the windows out of his car a number of times. They've stolen stuff from his apartment. The people that he's tried to reach, he came home one day and they were up on the roof, taking the dish off the roof, the satellite thing. And then I felt the sting of the sleet and the cold, and I went, wow, this is real. This would be really hard to leave everything you know and come over here and not have a friend in the world and stay here and try to reach these people for Jesus Christ and look out the window and see that and realize you got to go out there because you got to go get them. You can't sit in here and wait for them to come to you. You got to go get them, even if it's sideways sleet. That's just real. You got other people doing that in the jungles, right? In oppressive heat with snakes and scorpions and all that kind of stuff. It's just real. We need encouragement. How can you help? Partner with us. Financial gifts, of course, one time, monthly. Churches, individuals make the ministry possible. You can learn more at our table about this, okay? And that's us. You got some addresses here that you can go to. We have a blog. We use our blog, use technology, lots of pictures. You'll see yourselves on it. So here's the thing. You see that first address, jacksonsforscotlandblogspot.com? And give us about a week. In about a week, go to that address. And my daughter is roaming around here, and she's the photographer. And she's taking all these pictures that you've seen me using. She does that. And you'll see your smiling faces on our blog. All right? She's going to take some when I preach in just a little while. So you go and check it out, and we'll do a write-up about your church. That's how we keep people who are giving to our ministry or thinking about it involved in what we're doing and where we're at. It's how we're accountable. That's one way. We also do Facebook. You can see there. I don't know about that Twitter thing. I don't do all that. That's my wife and my daughter. I don't know how to tweet. I have no idea how to do that. All right. Let me take just a moment before we have to end. We've got 5, maybe 10 minutes. If you don't have any questions, that's fine. I don't feel like I have to keep talking. We can just quit and we do coffee. But if you have some specific questions about what you've heard, I'd love to clarify or answer anything at all that struck you, that you're curious about, what we're doing or why. Yes, sir.
Is there any other kind of faith in this college?
Yes. Cross denominations, it's pretty bad. The National Church is liberal Presbyterian. However, there's some bright spots in the National Church, the Church of Scotland. There are a few guys who are preaching the gospel and maintaining an evangelical rootedness in what they're trying to do. Guys who would be like-minded with us that we would love, we would appreciate what they're doing in ministry. But by and large, across the board, it's bleak and liberal. Very little gospel going on. In the population belt, there are a handful of guys who are pretty much associated with 20 schemes that are evangelicals, like-minded. They're doing work. There's some more work going on down in England and the UK as a whole. There's some other guys there in some bright spots, some different ministries. We even make use in 20 schemes of some theological training that's put out through those guys. So we're trying to be connected with what's going on in England and in Scotland. But it's really difficult. It's just very, very little. It's nothing like here, where you just kind of take your pick. It's a good question. Yes, ma'am.
What are the large barriers to seeing that culture of people coming to church, besides the poverty? You obviously talked about poverty and just the hard.
Yeah.
Are there other things that are preventing people from coming?
Yes, they hate the church. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. So I was sitting down with a Scott family in this church up in the Highlands, and she was 18 years old. Her name was Bryony. And I said, Bryony, how did the kids in the village feel about the two churches? There are two churches in that village of 2,000, the little bitty Baptist church of 18 people and the National Church. And I don't even know if they had that many people in it. Huge, big, beautiful building, hundreds of years old, and it's basically empty. And that's happening all over Scotland. And she said, oh, well, people my age in the village think that the worst thing about the village are the two churches that are here. I said, really? Why? And I think one of the reasons, they see the church as irrelevant. They see the church as intrusive. They see the church as the enemy. But now they'll talk to you about spiritual stuff. If you engage them on a spiritual kind of level, like New Age is big over there. This is a European mentality. They'll talk to you like that. But as soon as you go to the church, they're just about ready to fight. They don't trust the church. They can't stand it. That would be one huge barrier. But let me tell you one that helps overcome all of the other barriers, because that's a very insightful question. It's what you hear going on right now as I speak. They love our accent. I know, that's what I did. I had this British lady up in Scotland. So we leave our host home, and she's got this beautiful English garden. She's out there, and I said, I greeted her. My wife and I are just walking along. You know, we're going to go through the village and just meet everybody and just see what happens. So we're doing that, and I greet her, and as she saw us coming, she turned her back, right? She has a little trowel in her hand. She turned her back to us. Like, okay, I don't want to talk to you, right? So we talked to her. Hi, how you doing? You sure do have a beautiful garden. When she heard that accent, it was like, whoop! And she was full on. And she wanted to know where we were from and why we were there. And so I started talking, and I just saw her face literally change, physically change. And she said this. She stopped me mid-sentence, and she says, oh, you have the most lovely accent.
You don't sound like we do.
I don't sound like you do?
No.
How do I sound?
You sound Southern.
It's because
people do I sound Southern?
Yes.
Oh, yuck.
Best accent ever.
Really?
Southern accents, yes.
Okay, so here's what she said. You have the most lovely drawl. I'll use it, right? So you walk around the scheme, they told me, hey, I'm still answering your question. I'm just all into it. You just wait. So the schemes are bad. So in February, I took my cell phone, I put it on video, and I'm walking around the scheme. Later on, Mez told me, he goes, dude, you might as well just put a sign around your neck, mug me. I said, I walked around for, I didn't get mugged. Why not? So I'm walking around and I see an old lady and I stop and I greet her and I talk to her and where are you from? And I film the whole thing. She's talking to me. As soon as they hear that accent, man, it's like moth to flame. You got them. So use it. So I did. And I saw a guy with a nice four-wheeler, Toyota four-wheeler. All, man, it was bells and... So, man, that's a nice ride because I like that. Really, you like that? But I filmed that. I didn't get mugged. So I asked Mez, what's the deal? He said they felt sorry for you. They pity. I said, what? Why did they feel sorry? He said, white boy, American, in the scheme, we got to be here. Why are you here? Use it. So I did. So you can find things that will connect you and give you opportunity to engage people and just treat them like people. Now, the accent for me, when I'm with my people back home, it changes. I was raised in the military, so I can do different kinds of things if I need to. I guess I don't think about it. But when I get around my people, I'll drop right into talking like this. And, what y'all want to do today? And yeah, so it's not that bad. I can clean it up so you can understand me. So I don't have to have an interpreter up here. But those are the kinds of things that would be barriers. They have a weird understanding of religion. They don't understand church. They don't get it. Just like people here. Typical things that you would think of being barriers here. But the surprising one for me was how militant they are about the church. But they won't be militant if you try to engage them on kind of a spiritual level and then move in to it. It's a little bit different. Good questions. Anything else before we quit? Yes, ma'am. Right. Good.
How is that different there? Because
totally. Within. Yes, they don't want out. They would be highly offended if you came in and tried to give them the idea that you were rescuing them and wanting to get them out. They would be highly offended. They don't want to leave. They're like, so what's the problem? My granddaddy lived here. I live here. I got a roof. I got a good life. I steal from him. He steals from me. We're good with that. They don't want to leave. Most of them don't want to leave. Most of them, another barrier would be middle class. The class system over there is like race here. The black, white, I guess Latino, Mexican, American, white thing that goes on here. Over there, it's class. Lower class or working class. That's what they call themselves. Working class. Although most of them don't have a job. Then the middle class and then the posh, the upper class. The classes don't like each other. They don't play well together. So I was asking Matthew. You saw Matthew, real clean cut, nice hair. He's middle class Scott. He said, Jeff, they would spot me in half a second coming onto a scheme and I'd be history. You can make it. They feel sorry for you. They don't feel sorry for me. They want to kill me. That's scheme life. So when we go in, we live with them, we try to change from within, and we stay there and we keep it going there. And we then turn them out to reach others within the scheme. Good question. One more and then I'll, because we got folks coming in.
Is the church seen as upper class and that's why it's seen as intrusive? Or what class is the
sometimes, no, it's more middle class. The church is more of a middle class environment. Like the church that you just saw on the screen, 18,000 people and no gospel witness and it's closed. That church was there before the scheme. And the government comes in and they build these scheme communities around the churches that are mostly middle class, and it kills the church because the middle class people don't want to be associated with the schemes. They don't mix, they don't play well, so the people leave. And now you've got this church and it's dead. That's what happens in a lot of our revitalization efforts. These are great, great questions. My wife and I, at the conclusion of the worship service, will be out at the table right out the doors, and we'd love to just put some stuff in your hands you look at and read. You can go online and look at those different addresses and websites, 20schemes.com. You can see all kinds of videos, testimonies. Read Mez's blog. It's hilarious. Mez is a great writer and a good guy. So thank you for your time this morning. I've run my mouth a lot. Now you got to listen to me for another hour. But God bless you. Pray for me, and we'll be out there at the conclusion. Thanks, Chuck.
Would you join me in thanking Jeff? So we've got about a 10-minute break between now and when our worship gathering will start. So get up and get some coffee, maybe catch one of the Jacksons.